Let's start this week's classic episode with a question. What would you do if you woke up one day and all your electronic devices simply didn't work? You couldn't log on to any website. You couldn't get the lights to switch on in your house. And of course, your phone was bricked. This might sound like the plot of many dystopian science fiction films, but it could one day become science fact. You see, it turns out that the angry, massive star that feeds all life on Earth could one day become the instrument of our own civilization's destruction. If a single powerful enough solar flare hits the magnetosphere of Earth, the human species could be thrown back into the Stone Age. Join us as we explore the fact, fiction, and terrifying possibility of solar flares and the end of the world as we know it.
From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
And I'm Ben.
And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. And today we're talking about the magnificent nuclear-powered sphere that's mostly made up of hydrogen and helium. And it's been burning for over 4.5 billion years, which is kind of weird to think, you know, when you think about what a year is.
I have a hard time comprehending an entire month.
Whoa, yeah, that is a long time. Really, Although, feels like January came and went already. Which is a little weird.
Yeah, I feel as though we're time travelers or Rip Van Winkles. We've become unstuck in time. But even if we were to travel to the very beginning of Earth's origins, we would still be running into that massive ball we call the sun. Little funny fact about the sun. Well, might be not funny to some people. It is responsible for all of the life that we know. The sun's energy feeds it's the entry level of the world's life forms. And without it, we would not be alive. So if you want to trace the origins of your existence and you're going by the energy, then you are going to inevitably run into the solar energy that plant forms take in, and it later filters down to you and the things that you eat.
And before that, even caused an atmosphere to form so that any kind of plant life or, you know, even earlier than that life could occur.
Right. And so I know we're making the sun look great here. It sounds like, you know, an online dating profile for how awesome the sun is and how much it'll take care of
you. I used to be a deity back in the day. What?
Yeah. And it's all nurturing and stuff. Also, the sun has a dirty open secret, which is that in a few billion years, this awesome stellar parent, it's a pun. Sorry. Somebody put in the bad pun music. Okay, I earned it. That'll be the last one. But like one of those awesome parents who occasionally goes on a horrific binge of mass murder, the sun will expand and destroy the planet. That is not supervillain hyperbole. It will literally destroy planet Earth.
That's correct.
We've got a while before it happens, but we also have some other sun shenanigans that pose a much more clear and present danger, to steal the title of a movie.
That's correct. Every once in a while, that sun gets a little angry. Little parts of it get angry. When I say little, I mean several hundred times the diameter of Earth angry.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that doesn't make any sense,
does it? No, it does make sense, because it's a way to show the scale of the Earth. A small disturbance in the force of the sun is probably going to be several times larger than the Earth anyway. And one thing that we need to hit real quick are the basic facts, right? So how far away is the sun?
The sun is about eight light minutes away from the Earth.
That's terrifying.
Well, yeah, it's terrifying. It's also nice because it's warm. It's pretty warm.
We get that fresh sunlight.
Yeah.
We're in the old Goldilocks zone. Then we also need to talk about how hot or how much energy it produces. Let's go with how hot. How hot is the sun at the core?
So right at the core, it's greater than 15 million degrees Kelvin.
Kelvin, not Celsius.
It's a bit warm.
And we also know that in addition to hydrogen and helium, the sun is composed of some very strong magnetic fields.
Yeah, that's kind of what keeps the whole system going. And sometimes those magnetic fields get a bit disrupted.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to really paint a picture, but you have to think about it as, for me at least, this helps. When you think about it as these electromagnetic coils that sometimes they tighten a little bit, they get a little tangled and they tighten up. And that's when you'll see something called a sunspot, where it's a little dark on the surface of the sun. And if you go check out the Solar Dynamics Observatory, you can get a really good picture of what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And those are the places that people who observe the sun, astronomers, they really get a little nervous when you see especially a large sunspot or a sunspot that's kind of in a cluster.
Right. Yeah. We do know that sunspots tend to occur more toward the equator of the sun. Mm-hmm. And we know that observation of sunspots dates back pretty far. Several thousand years ago, astronomers in China noticed sunspots. So the 12th century BC, a thing called the Book of Changes, because all the good book titles weren't taken by that point. Mm-hmm. So you could still have really cool names like that. They recorded a sunspot. They said the sun was yellow at its rising and a black vapor as large as a coin was observed at its center. And then on the other side of the world, the Aztecs, ruling Mexico before the Spaniards arrived, also paid attention to the sun and its cycles and its sunspots. Now, sunspots are a natural thing, and human beings have been aware of their existence, if not their causes, for a long time. And now that we know that the causes come from magnetic disturbances in the sun's force, we also have learned a couple of other things. We've learned that they're on a cycle, right? That the sun has a cycle every 11 years or so. It hits what's called a solar maximum. And that's when these solar flares are much more likely to occur in clusters, right?
Yeah. And the reason that they're a little scary is because they have the potential to cause some serious harm to planet Earth. They also have the potential to cause harm to a lot of our electronics.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's really our communications. Mm-hmm. Because they, like I was saying, they coil up, and they coil really tightly. And sometimes they'll just release, and basically nothing will happen. There won't be any kind of craziness on the sun. But sometimes if it goes past a breaking point and basically those coils snap back in place,
mm-hmm.
you'll have a solar flare. A solar flare will occur.
Yeah, and a solar flare is the easy way to find it, if you were looking at it through a telescope, it'd be a sudden brightening observed over the sun's surface or the solar limb. And this is a huge release of energy. The number that I found for it was 6 × 10^25 joules.
It's crazy because it's not only releasing light and releasing X-rays and
UV
gamma
radiation.
Yeah, gamma rays.
Mm-hmm.
It also has the potential to cause something called a coronal mass ejection or a CME. And that's where it gets really hairy for the Earth.
Right. Yeah, because the Earth, like the sun, has its own magnetosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And this magnetosphere is also sensitive to disturbances from the sun's magnetosphere because, again, you know, in the scale of the solar system, let alone the galaxy, the sun and the Earth are really, really close. We're pretty much bumper to bumper.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a great spot, except when these kind of things happen. So you and I did a video episode on this that really caught both of our interests, and we did it a while back, right? And here's the question. This is the question we're going to answer in this podcast. Matt, is it possible that a CME could destroy Earth's electronics?
Yes, is the answer. Okay. Yeah. Because a CME is essentially a magnetic shockwave that's being sent out from the sun, and depending on where it's headed, if it's headed toward the Earth, you can have some serious issues. So first, let's think about what's floating around outside, on the, let's say, in space really close to Earth.
Okay.
We've got all these satellites.
Mm-hmm. And modern civilization depends on these for a number of things, right?
A ton of things.
Sure.
And if you have an electromagnetic disturbance that could, say, was powerful enough to shut down some of those electronics, which it can be, that's not good.
Right. Yeah, I would say that's apocalyptic.
But it's not just satellites. Those are important.
Mm-hmm.
And the lack of communication would be a terrible thing. But it also has the potential to knock out the entire energy grid, which is pretty insane when you think about, because depending on where it hits, with the severity with which it hits, it has the potential to, a CME, to essentially fry some cables that are going from your power plant, say, to the rest of the grid. And if that happens, you can have a rolling blackout, which could be really bad, because if it occurs, then you can have basically copper wire being fried throughout an entire region of the U.S. And we're just speaking about the U.S. right now, because that's the model that I've looked at.
Yeah. And we also have the North American model that can kind of incorporate parts of Canada. Mm-hmm. So we know that when a grid is affected, when a power grid is affected, it's frighteningly easy to produce a domino or a snowball effect. So because the grid supplies load, if it has too much of a load, then it's just as bad as it not having enough power. When one segment of this system is destroyed, then this means that other segments of the system will be hit with things. The way that the rolling blackout occurs is that different chains of the power system are trying to fight an increasing number of anomalies, you know? So we said a domino effect, right? So when you knock out one domino, it's next to other dominoes, and it knocks them out sequentially. I don't want to scare anybody into thinking that the entire North American power system is a house of cards, but I do want people to realize that if the right solar flare, or excuse me, the right CME hits at the right time, then we will lose terrestrial power. Yes. And this is where, if I could, get a little apocalyptic.
Oh, please.
All right. So when we're talking about disrupting power, you know, it's tempting to think, oh man, what a crappy inconvenience. I'm going to have to read a book.
Yeah.
Go outside. What is that? But what we're talking about, could potentially be a disaster that is unprecedented in history. Think of all the people right now, just in your town, whose lives depend on a reliable stream of electricity. This would be people in hospitals. This would be, people who are maybe even driving a car, which is something I wanted to ask you about. Mm-hmm. And then let's look at the satellites as well. So we said losing communication. Yeah, that could be huge. The ability to communicate using satellite is the reason that ships don't go off course. Mm-hmm. The ability to communicate that way is the reason that planes are able to land without killing everyone and crashing into each other. Now, hold on, Ben. Some people might be saying, and correctly, I thought that radio played a big part in that. You are correct. And the X-rays and UV radiation from a CME will disrupt the ionosphere, making long-range radio communication also go kaput.
And this isn't just something that Ben and I are making up. We've actually seen the effects of a CME before. One of the only major times that it actually affected life on Earth was in 1859, when a CME caused a massive magnetic fluctuation in the Earth's magnetosphere, which then caused a couple of things to happen. Like, I know the telegraph systems failed at the time. Compasses wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that doesn't sound like anything too crazy, I guess, right now. But you have to think about the load that was on the electrical systems at the time. It probably wasn't much at all. And they probably didn't even get to see some of the major effects that if that would have occurred this year or in a year when we've had our grid the way it is now.
Right.
We just haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah, it's a possible disaster that becomes more disastrous with time. Now, we do know that there are ways for things to be shielded from the effects of a CME, but we know that the vast majority of things are not, because the potential of a CME of this magnitude occurring is relatively rare. It's like winning a very terrible lottery.
The worst lottery you've ever won, yes.
The worst, and the last
yes.
that you might win. So,
but I just want to get back to what you were saying really fast.
Go ahead.
Just the idea of losing communication and in a time when you have no power also, that is one of the great post-apocalyptic scenarios where you're cut off from everybody else. You're confused. You're scared and you don't have a good way to get food. You don't have a good way to get to wherever you need to get to, and you just feel cut off. And that's when the human, the human brain goes a little crazy. And that's when you have The Road.
Okay.
Which we really, that's the movie that I think about when I think about the possibilities of a massive CME. Cannibalism. That's what I think about.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So kind of a Lord of the Flies situation. How long would we have for, before civilization collapsed without the electronic underpinnings?
Especially in a city.
Yeah. Well, a city is always one of the worst places to be in a natural disaster environment. And while we are saying some scary stuff, of course, we did some due diligence and said that the possibility of this occurring is relatively small so far as we know. But here's the tricky part. Okay, so let's compare it to another natural disaster. This would essentially be a natural disaster in terms of its effects. So we know already that people are having a great deal of difficulty predicting the frequency or the strength of natural disasters that are on Earth, which means they're much easier to observe. Scientists still have a lot of difficulty accurately predicting eruptions or earthquakes or hurricanes, or rather the path and effect of a hurricane. We have made great strides in our search for better methods of prediction here, but we have yet to be able to 100% of the time accurately predict these things. And the sun, as close as it may be on a cosmic scale, is far, far beyond our abilities to reach it in a practical scale.
And especially to make any kind of predictive models.
Right. Yeah.
But thankfully we do have the Solar Dynamics Observatory now.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the best things that to come around, in my opinion, for a long time from a technology standpoint, because now we really do, we can almost see the entirety of the sun at all times now.
And before we head out to fiddle away our free time enjoying all the wonderful electronic goodies that—
Before the sun destroys them all?
Before the sun destroys us all, and before we ask you some questions, Matt, where can people go to get more information about this?
Okay, so this is where I go every morning when I get into work, because I'm extremely paranoid about solar flares and the sun's activity. I go to spaceweather.com. It's a fantastic source. You can look at everything from, you can get solar flare alerts from them on your phone, which is pretty cool. You can also look at the severity of and possibility of solar flares in the next 24 hour period. You can also go to solarham.net, H-A-M.net. And, that's a really cool place. It's got some of the best SDO images, up-to-date stuff, and again, it's got a CME prediction model, which is really cool. Again, it's not completely accurate, but it's fascinating to look at, and it makes me feel better knowing that I check it every morning.
Yeah.
And one last thing, if you want to just check out the SDO and you can look up images from the Solar Dynamics Observatory, go to sdo.gsfc.nasa.gov. It's kind of a long one. Hopefully you heard that. You may have to rewind it, but check it out. You can just search for SDO and NASA.
Well, do the address one more time.
It's sdo.gsfc.nasa.gov.
And hey, while you're on a computer trying to figure out if the sun will destroy us earlier than scheduled, why not take advantage of the time to let us know what you think about a couple of questions. I'm going to fire a couple off here. First, and my favorite question here, what would you do if you woke up one day and none of the electronics worked? Matt, do you have a question?
Yeah, I do. If let's say you got an alert on your phone that there's an imminent coronal mass ejection that's there, it's thought to be able to take out all of the electricity, and you only have, let's say, an hour or 2 hours before it hits. What do you do? What's the first thing you do? I don't know, man. I don't want to give my answer away. We'll talk about this later.
Oh, I'm not giving my answer away.
Okay.
But what I would love to give away is the ways that you can contact us. Matt, you and I are online all the time so that people can write to us at Facebook and at Twitter, where we are Conspiracy Stuff. You guys, we're on the internet in so many places. I hesitate.
And that's the end of this classic episode. If you have any thoughts or questions about this episode, you can get into contact with us in a number of different ways. One of the best is to give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. If you don't want to do that, you can send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.